Don't miss the conversation.
Cap and J-Hood.
Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Cap and Hoodie.
Bop. And listen to Cap and J-Hood at home and in the office.
Now, back to more Cap and J-Hood on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Points, 20 boards, never happened, baby. How's it feel right now?
I'm tired as hell.
You can rest later. You're young.
I need a recovery beer.
Who doesn't love a recovery beer? Curious. We'll have to think about that. Feel free if you'd like to share with us your favorite activity to go ahead and have a recovery beer. What is always when you're after, you know, I think lots of projects around the house after you put in a hard day's work. The old, DIY, do-it-yourself activity oftentimes leads to a great recovery beer. Nothing more satisfying. Luka Doncic there, after his 60 points, 21 rebound, 10 assist effort, giving you the breakdown of how he felt last night. Tired and needed a recovery beer. And what's interesting is it got Tyler's head going last night after watching that, thinking about how this relates to the Bulls.
Yeah, because I was thinking, and I've never really had this thought with Luka until last night. Maybe in the moment I had it a little bit, but, you know, the Bulls kind of had an inside track at getting into that top three that year in that draft. The 2018 draft, the Bulls started that season 3-20.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you start a season 3-20, you're in the conversation for the number one pick at that point. Then, after a 10-game losing streak, that bled its way into the start of December,
yep,
they go on a stretch where they win 10 of 12 and kind of work their way, not into relevancy, but maybe sort of out of the hunt for that number one pick. They go on another 7-game losing streak towards the end of the year, and they finish the season 27-55. That's the sixth worst record in the NBA.
Yes.
And the same record that the Sacramento Kings, who ended up picking second and made a little bit of a leap in the lottery that year, that was the same record as the Sacramento Kings. And there's six wins off of Phoenix, who had the number one pick and ultimately picked DeAndre Ayton.
Yes.
So it got me thinking, like, well, is Luka Doncic a what if in terms of what, like, could he have been a Bull, and could we be talking about the Bulls having that generational superstar?
Well, and it's even, coincidentally, there's even more of a chance because you mentioned they finished with the same record as the Kings. The Bulls actually won a coin flip against the Kings. Now, what that ended up doing, I'm reading back at NBC Sports Chicago, what that ended up doing, both the Bulls and Kings finished with those identical 27-55 records, meaning they both had a 5.3% chance of earning the number one pick. They also had identical odds to land the number two or number three pick. But after winning the coin flip, the specific combinations assigned to each team that needed to be handed out ended up going, you know, they gave the Bulls the sixth slot.
Right.
And the numerical combination that the Kings got was based on the seventh slot. To your point, the Kings end up moving up in the lottery, landing number two overall. The Kings had the opportunity, because DeAndre Ayton was selected first overall by the Suns in that draft, if the Kings wanted to, they could have selected Luka Doncic. Had the Chicago Bulls actually lost that coin flip to the Kings, it would have been their numerical combination that won the lottery, thus giving them the number two pick, thus the opportunity to have drafted Luka Doncic had they not won the coin flip.
And it got me thinking, like, there's a world out there that exists where, okay, you don't go on that stretch of winning 10 of 12, or maybe you win the coin flip or lose the coin flip, Sacramento, like you were saying there, and you end up with the number two overall pick, or you end up with the third overall pick, because he was still around and the third overall pick too.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you wind up in that situation there and the ability to draft Luka Doncic instead. Oh boy, what a tailspin to put you into. Not only do you draft Wendell Carter, but that turns into one of the pieces in the Vooch trade.
Yep.
And it just starts this spiral of events that has kind of put this Bulls franchise where it is right now. But I don't know. Do you consider Luka to be a what if in Chicago sports? Because it's a little more complicated. It's not like Patrick Mahomes, where you literally passed on him. But it kind of makes me think now with the what the Bulls are doing, hey, maybe you just kind of blow this thing up now, eat your losses the rest of the year, and find your way into that top four potentially, or at least set yourself up for a good chance to get into that top four. Keep your pick this year with a bunch of generational players, quote unquote, in this year's draft.
Yeah.
And like potential all-stars in this year's draft. And maybe you do find that next guy that is a superstar in this league.
Well, let's be honest. I don't really, I haven't oftentimes thought of, oh, as a what if scenario more than anything, because I just had to lay it out, right? I actually had to refresh my memory as to how it played out, where the Bulls had the opportunity to actually select second overall if they don't win that coin toss. So no, I don't think of Luka as a what if often, or, you know, it really, because the truth is, it's not like they ever had a real opportunity to select him. It does feel more like when you look back, okay, Ryan Pace had an opportunity to select Patrick Mahomes when he was drafting a quarterback and chose not to. That one obviously is much more clear cut, a direct line you can see. Whereas Luka, we've got to go through these permutations of laying it out. Now, what's interesting, though, is if the Bulls land the second overall pick, you wonder, would John Paxson and Gar Forman at that time have selected Luka Doncic? I think it's certainly possible. I think they may have been more enticed by that. There's lots of teams who had Luka as their number one player on their board. Now, it was hard to get away from DeAndre Ayton because of his size, but a lot of teams did really like Luka Doncic and believe he was the best player in that draft. So it's certainly possible if the Bulls do get the two pick in that draft that they would have selected him. Then it leads to the question, well, if the Bulls had Luka on their roster, how different are things? Because there's a very good chance John Paxson and Gar Forman are still running the Bulls.
Yeah.
Right? At that point, you have to believe that if they have that superstar who they were never able to land, there's certainly a possibility there where maybe, just maybe, they're still in charge.
And quite frankly, if they had landed Luka Doncic, like, there's probably good reason to still have them running the Bulls, because they found the superstar that this team needed to continue to get to where they want to go. And you pair that would have been that 2017-18 season was the first year of Zach LaVine with the Bulls, too. A pairing of Zach and Luka, like, who knows maybe how Zach's career goes, but some of these other picks that the Bulls may have made over the last couple of years maybe would have benefited from playing around like a Luka Doncic. Like, Kobe White, would his career be significantly different playing alongside Luka Doncic as opposed to playing alongside someone like Zach LaVine like he has the last couple of years?
I think Kobe White's a great player to identify as. He's somebody who seems like he would fit in well alongside Luka Doncic, right, where you have give him an opportunity, open space to shoot. And that's the one thing that's undeniable when Luka's out there. Certainly a more ball-dominant player like Jalen Brunson, who we touched upon, wants the ball in his hands, whereas Kobe White, you know, he can handle the ball, but the reality is he's definitely just much better as a spot-up shooter. So to have him on the floor with Luka, boy, that really does make you think, wow, where could his career be right now if he was playing alongside someone like Luka Doncic?
Right. It's a great, like, you're right. You have to go through a little bit of a mental gymnastics to get to this point. But, like, you start a season 3-20, the conversation is all of a sudden, all right, who are we going to be drafting in June, or July, rather? Who are we going to be looking at? Like, you start watching college basketball when the team's 3-20. And maybe in his case, you're watching the overseas. What do you play? Do you play for Real Madrid?
Yes.
I believe overseas.
In
you start
Spain,
watching that. Like, if the Bulls were 3-20, you're watching a lot of Victor Wembanyama and maybe some G League Ignite with Scoot Henderson right now.
So, no, that's you bring up Victor Wembanyama, and I wonder, how are you feeling right now? Because there's been, you know, I know, hey, Charles Barkley said it directly to Waddle and Sylvie when he was on with them last, and then he also referenced it on TNT last week.
It's time to break up both of these teams.
Break them up.
He's still in the playoffs.
Oh, no, man.
They're not.
How are you going to break up the team?
They
need two players. Each team needs two more players.
LeBron and KD. These two teams are mediocre at best. I told my boy Waller and Sylvie last week, time to break up the Bulls.
Do you agree? Do you think the Bulls need to, quote-unquote, break it up?
Yes. Because you look at, this team is not a Lonzo Ball away from being this dominant team. Like, Lonzo Ball's a good player, but at the end of the day, He's a starting role player for this team. He's going to play a role as a defensive guy and a spot-up three-point shooter. You're not getting some superstar back. This isn't like if KD went down or Giannis went down or Jason Tatum went down. You're talking about a point guard, a floor general, a traditional floor general who can also shoot the three and play defense for you. You're not talking about some star that's going to take you from where you're sitting right now, the 11th spot, and catapult you into the conversation for a top three seed in the East. That's not who Lonzo Ball is.
Yeah. My question, though, is so if you're breaking it up, does that mean you're trading DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine before this trade deadline? Is that what in
your
head?
It's definitely DeMar DeRozan. And I think if you're the Bulls, you're trying to find a way to somehow package Vooch into that DeMar DeRozan trade as well. I could see LaVine hanging around.
Because you've maxed him.
You've maxed him out. And let's be honest, he's never been a winning player. So there's no guarantee that just because you keep LaVine, the wins are you're going to fall into a couple wins. Like, we've seen a lot of empty Zach LaVine games over the course of his career.
My only question is, if you trade DeMar DeRozan and Vooch, you know, you're not landing anything more than a late first-round pick, right, in all reality. Maybe if you're lucky, something in the early 20s. But
you may be working your way into getting your own pick. And I think that's the more significant part.
That is how much more do they need to lose, though, when other teams are already in the midst of a tank job, right? Because they have their pick no matter what, right? Like, right. The Bulls need to land in the top four to retain it. So that's the question is, you know, right now you're 14-19, but you've got 7 teams in front of you with worse records. You know, so
but, I mean, you've been whole pretty much this entire season. Sans Lonzo Ball, you've been whole this season. Whereas, okay, you start to shell off some of these pieces here, you could see the wheels fall off really quickly.
But are any of these other teams below you, though, going to jump you? Because you're still going to win games in the NBA just by a product of being an NBA team. Mm-hmm. You know, you play enough games, and whereas these teams, you know, that are below you, they're not going to. Chances are most of them aren't going on some ridiculous run. It feels like, you know, teams like, I suppose, although after the other night, the Rockets would be one of those teams you thought is not going to put it on teams. The Bulls had something to say about that. I don't know. It just looks at like the Bulls are in a spot where they don't need, you know, I don't think subtracting DeMar and Vucic from your roster automatically propels you into a spot where you're falling below these teams and increasing your chances at lottery odds. And then if you do move off of them, though, quickly, what's your chance of landing in the top four? It's still less than 50%, you know?
Yeah, but I think if you're giving yourself a swing at it, like, you might. This is the draft to do it, it seems like, too.
Sure.
When you look at the guys at the top, it's worth taking that risk because, listen, if you fail this year, like, you're not going to find success this year in all likelihood with the way the season has started and with what's on the horizon as well. Like, do we even know if Lonzo Ball is going to come back this year? That's been one of the biggest mysteries in Chicago sports of the past, like, what, 5-10 years? Like,
with no clarity right now to speak of either.
Yeah. And we don't know where that thing's trending.
312-332-3776. He's Tyler Aki. I'm Jeff Meller in for Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000.
Cap and Jay Hood. Mornings.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
JJ Watt yesterday actually afternoon announced officially that it was his last home game yesterday. He announced yesterday that he had played in his final home game for the Cardinals. He is going to retire at the end of the season. And he is one of only three players, Tyler Aki, as I, Jeff Meller, and Tyler Aki fill in for Cap and Jay Hood this morning. He's one of only three players in NFL history to win three Defensive Player of the Year awards, along with Lawrence Taylor and Aaron Donald. So now you've seen, he's probably one of the first players who, like, an all-time great, I have to imagine, for you, whose entire career you remember, if I'm not assuming here too much.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The one thing that maybe people, and myself included, maybe like lose on J.J. Watt's greatness is that there's holes in the seasons, right? Because he had some of those injuries over the course of his career. So especially once he got to his age 27 season, played five games the next year. Then he got a full 16. Then he got 8, 16, 7, 14 this year, which has been nice to see that he's been able to have that sort of revitalization, almost a 10-sack season this year so far. But no, certainly he's been one of the all-time greats that I feel like I remember his rise. And like you saw that second season in the NFL where he goes over 20 sacks and he is unequivocally at the time the best player on the defensive side of the ball in just his second season in the league. And you're thinking, oh, wow, this guy's the next mega star that we're going to see in the NFL. So, yeah, he was definitely one of those guys for me growing up watching him and just kind of seeing his rise, because he started his career right about when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of when you really remember guys' careers and you feel like you grow up watching them and seeing the entirety of their careers.
You know, interestingly enough, I always remember J.J. Watt because you pointed out, like, 2012, his second season, he had 20 and a half sacks. That was his first Defensive Player of the Year award that he ended up winning. But that season always stands out to me because I remember, in particular, the Houston Texans came to Soldier Field in Week 10 that season, and they came in, and the Bears at that time were 7-1. So it was Week 10. Mm-hmm. The Bears had their bye at that point, but the Texans came into that game 7-1, and the Bears were 7-1. So it was like an absolute showdown. It was a Sunday night game. And I don't know if it was, I'm trying to remember if it was flexed or I probably not, because it was still early enough in the season where, and the flexing, I don't remember when the flexing was adopted by NBC, mm-hmm. but it wasn't 20 years ago. It was within the last decade that NBC adopted the flexing schedule. So I can't recall if it was flexed there or if it just happened to be a Sunday night game on the schedule, but it was, you know, Lovie Smith, I think it was his final season. Because that's when the Bears were 7-1, yeah. mm-hmm. the Texans were 7-1, and so you had a showdown between the Bears and the Texans with this, you know, superstar in J.J. Watt. Now, Matt Schaub was the quarterback for the Texans back then. They still were, you know, they were essentially relying upon Arian Foster and Andre Johnson mm-hmm. to carry them as an offense, and J.J. Watt, though, was the clear star on that roster. And I remember that, I always remember that game in particular because it felt like the two franchises went in opposite directions, right? Now, the Texans never reached the heights that they hoped they would, but they were clearly, you know, a team on the rise. And they won that game on Sunday Night Football in Soldier Field 13-6. And the Bears, and at that point, again, like as I mentioned, that was, I believe, Lovie Smith's last season, where they started out 7-1, and the Bears then end up concluding that season 10-6, and Lovie Smith is fired at the end of the year. And so I'll always remember, you know, the ascension of J.J. Watt kind of coincided with the end of the Lovie Smith era. At least for me, that's one thing I always kind of like locked in, like, you know, his career ascension, the Bears and the Lovie Smith era ending at that point. So it's interesting to see him hang him up after a very, as you said, very productive career that occasionally was, you know, hampered by some injuries, which, you know, you wonder. It just goes to show, like, when if you're not playing at the quarterback position, time is not your friend in the NFL, right? Like we hark on running backs, you know, being over the hill once they hit, you know, 30. And honestly, let's be honest, I think the idea of a running back at 30 is ridiculous at this point. It's basically like after your first contract, no one wants to re-sign you as a running back because they're like, I don't want to be the guy who ends up, you know, holding the bag when the guy, you know, ends up, you know, hitting the wall. Mm-hmm. So the truth is, like, J.J. Watt registers or those three Defensive Player of the Year awards, and after, you know, 6-7 years into his career, he's basically no longer the force that he once was. And maybe we're starting to see that a little bit with Aaron Donald as well, who's been shut down for the Rams. You know, he won the Super Bowl last year and then was having conversations about possibly retiring.
I mean, he had the letter already written out.
So, and I bring him up because obviously he's the one guy you look at as like a peer in terms of ability to J.J. Watt. Like it's Aaron Donald and J.J. Watt.
Yeah, those two are kind of jockeying back and forth for the greatest defensive player of this latest generation of guys. But the other thing with J.J. Watt, too, that he kind of, like when you're learning the nuances of football, remember he was a master of deflecting passes at the line of scrimmage, too. And that was one of those things where when you're learning the game, it's like, okay, if you can't get to the quarterback, you can still knock down a pass. And in that second season, not only did he have 20 and a half sacks, he also deflected 16 passes, too. So you're forcing 16 incompletions from the defensive end spot, that edge rusher position that is so, so important in today's NFL, and you're finding a new skill. And I remember he was like that first guy that I kind of learned about of, okay, there's different things that defensive linemen do outside of just getting to the quarterback. You can also disrupt the games in other ways.
And what was crazy, too, was how the Texans would incorporate him into the offense near the goal line.
He'd be there.
You know, he'd line up. And
he was their fridge.
Absolutely. But a far more athletic. I was watching highlights yesterday. He made some ridiculously absurd catches where he basically would block out the defender and then go and almost grab it one-handed and just make these. And there's one touchdown catch he made early in his career where instead of throwing it near the goal line, it was almost a fade route, and he ends up getting both feet down, like making an acrobat. It was I'll find it and I'll tweet it out. But like the athleticism that J.J. Watt had as a defensive end set slash, you know, defensive tackle was unparalleled for me until Aaron Donald came into the league. So it was pretty staggering just to watch some of the highlights yesterday when he made the announcement, an all-time legend hanging him up after just a very illustrious career.
You know, it's funny. You bring up the receiving numbers there. I just looked it up. So in 2014, he had 3 touchdown catches.
Yeah.
All right. That would be second on the Chicago Bears right now. Tied for second with 3 touchdown catches. And actually, he had 5 touchdowns that entire season because he also scooped and scored one, and he had a pick 6. So he has he had 5 touchdowns that season, and that would be second among Bears pass catchers this year. So
it's interesting. Now, and maybe it's because it kind of got lost in the fact that the Texans, even though they were good, they were never really more than, you know, one and done in the playoffs, right? Like, they always were locked into that early Saturday AFC wildcard playoff game, usually against the Bengals. Half the time, Andy Dalton's throwing. You mentioned if J.J. Watt wasn't deflecting it, he was actually, like, grabbing it in midair from Andy Dalton and taking it home for a pick 6. It seemed like that was a yearly occurrence for a little stretch there I feel like it got lost in the shuffle just a bit because the Texans, maybe as a team, never quite reached the heights where you would like a player of his caliber to go, right? Whereas Aaron Donald and the Rams finally, not only did they win the Super Bowl last year, but prior to that, they did actually make a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. So I think about it, and I always default to, I think Aaron Donald is the best defensive player I've ever seen. And listen, but for you, you didn't get to see Lawrence Taylor.
Right.
I saw Lawrence Taylor, and the difference was, as great as Lawrence Taylor was, he was able to do it as an outside linebacker, you know, basically as an edge rusher. Whereas Aaron Donald, I've never seen a guy so disruptive from the defensive tackle position, right? And so for me, that's why, and trust me, I remember Lawrence Taylor's heyday. And so I always think, oh, Aaron Donald, the best defensive player I've ever seen. But J.J. Watt is comparable when you look at the numbers, right? Like, he's the one guy who, before Aaron Donald got there, he was kind of doing his own thing that had never been done before. So interesting to see one of the all-time greats hang him up yesterday after, or at least announcing that he'll hang him up after the end of this season.
I think, too, the one reason why I don't feel like I missed J.J. Watt's career, even though he did miss so many games with injury, is because of his brother, T.J., too, who does a lot of the same stuff. And he goes out, he can have that 20 sack season. He's led the league in sacks multiple times. So it feels like you haven't necessarily missed J.J. Watt's career, even though there's been holes in some of the seasons where he's only played a handful of games, because T.J.'s been just as dominant over this early stretch of his career.
It's a great point. He's just picked up the mantle and gone right to it. Honestly, so TJ Watt, after having won the Defensive Player of the Year last year, rightfully so, with 22 and a half sacks, you remember tying the record, he finished second and third the two previous seasons. So there's a possibility that TJ Watt could actually, if he can win the Defensive Player of the Year two more times, join that list, which would be just absolutely insane. Poor Derek Watt. Derek Watt is their brother. He's the fullback.
And he's the fullback.
And he just is nuts. Man, that's a... that. You know what? He's this era's Cooper Manning.
Well, at least he got to the NFL.
Yeah, fair. But Cooper, a lot of people believe he would have made it if he hadn't suffered the injury that he did. 312-332-3776, reminiscing about some all-time greats in the NFL. Another all-time great who is retired. The greatest safety. How about that? From greatest defensive players we've ever seen to the greatest safety of all time, taking a new gig. Ed Reed officially announced as the head coach of Bethune-Cookman, and it reminded me immediately of one of my all-time favorite clips from NFL Network. We'll share that with you next here on ESPN 1000.
Cap J. Hood.
Follow on Instagram at Cap J. Hood.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Put out early in the season, probably five, six games into the year, that I wanted to see the Bears be in on as a free agent was Josh Jacobs, is Josh Jacobs. Now, this was prior to him ripping off a stretch of games where he essentially put himself, he might be atop the class. Of course, Saquon Barkley is also going to be an NFL free agent here next offseason, and he has, of course, the better pedigree as, you know, draft status goes. But Josh Jacobs, if you look at the numbers, has been an absolute stud this year. He has been, he's the leading rusher right now. And honestly, I think one of the only things that gets in his way sometimes is the fact that Josh McDaniels gets away from him. And I don't know always why. He has proven to be a good pass catcher out of the backfield, something that I don't think he's always given enough credit for because he just doesn't get enough opportunities. But he's got over 1,500 yards rushing. He's got 11 touchdowns, and he has been at times the best running back in the league. Now, Saquon Barkley also will be a free agent, so he's somebody who's currently fourth in the NFL in rushing. Another name that I know Sylvie has brought up time and time again, Tony Pollard, is set to be a free agent. We'll see what the Cowboys do with him. He's been explosive, of course, averaging 5.3 yards a carry, and he's just 12 yards shy of 1,000. So we're talking about three running backs, and Miles Sanders, I haven't even mentioned him as well. I believe he's a free agent. So we're talking about four running backs in the top nine in rushing who are going to be free agents this offseason.
Four of the six running backs that are Pro Bowlers are going to be free agents.
And you know what? David Montgomery will be as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as much cash and cap room as the Bears have, I'm hopeful that they can go out and add one of those guys who I think are more Jacobs, Barkley, and to a lesser degree, Tony Pollard. I think those guys are true difference makers. David Montgomery's a nice, serviceable running back, and I know you don't generally want to pay running backs. However, when you have as much room as they have, I think the Bears need difference makers on their roster, Tyler. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, like, receivers are the elite difference-making wide receivers don't necessarily hit free agent. You're going to have to probably either draft them or trade for them. So the difference makers, I think, in this upcoming free agency cycle are likely to be the running backs. And I know that they don't often age well, but I think when you look at a guy like Josh Jacobs, you know, who is 24 years old, I mean, he's, you know, he's going to be 25. He'll be 25 next season. That's a guy who I think could be worth the money if you don't have to, obviously, I'm not talking about breaking the bank. I don't think running backs really get to break the bank in the NFL anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's a guy who I really hope the Bears are in on this upcoming offseason.
And I'm with you. My philosophy has always been don't pay the running backs, not worth it. You can find them in the draft in late, not just find them, you can find them in late rounds too. Like you look at a bunch of these guys, they're fourth, fifth round picks that turn into stars in the NFL. But here would be my one sort of contingency when I'm looking at signing a running back. I'm not guaranteeing any money past the third year.
Yeah.
With any of these guys, because that's when you look at the timeline with Justin Fields, that's when hopefully you're giving him the contract extension and you have to make sure you've got the capital to not only pay Justin Fields, but still field a serviceable roster around him as well to keep that window of what Bears fans are hoping is going to be a championship window open at that time. And he's going to have the fifth-year option, which you'd imagine the way that his career's going, barring some sort of catastrophic injury, knock on wood. But you'd imagine they pick up that fifth-year option. He obviously has the third and fourth year coming up. So that's why I'm not guaranteeing anything to one of these big running backs in this class past the third year.
And the truth is that most running back deals anyway are usually in the 4 to 5 year neighborhood, right, and very easily can be gotten out of in the fourth and fifth year. So I'm willing to look at it, and I'm pragmatic about it. I don't know. I just don't think the wide receiver is going to be on the market. You're going to have to trade for that guy. With your current first-round status, mm-hmm, being a very high pick, you're not going to trade away your first-round pick for a wide receiver, right? Like, that's just not, I don't think, in the cards if you're picking in the top five.
In all likelihood, the trade that the Bears would make to get a number one wide receiver, they probably don't have that pick right now.
Yeah, because
it's a trade that you're going to be trading back. If you got the number one overall pick, you could trade back, get whatever draft capital you get there, and trade one of those first-round picks that you're going to bring in for whatever wide receiver may become available.
Exactly. You know, and obviously, they've kind of made that move already with Chase Claypool. They're going to have to let that play out a little bit next year to see. Hopefully, it'll end up playing out better than it has so far to start, right? But we'll see if Chase Claypool gets back on the field this year.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't, to be honest with you, at this point, similar to the fashion what we were talking about with Jalen Johnson, right?
And,
you know, you just wonder, is it really worth it to press him into action when you're at this stage where wins don't necessarily help you? So we'll see how that plays out. But, like, I keep looking at it and I'm saying, you know what? Where is your money best spent? And I look at a guy like Jacobs, a guy like Barkley, or a guy like Pollard, and I say, man, you know what? Go get a true difference-making running back, and because of where you're at cap-wise, you can smooth it out so that you're adding that, you know, both all those guys, I think, are, you know, or at least Barkley and Jacobs are true blue-chip running backs, and Pollard is on the fringe of becoming one.
Right.
You need to see a little bit more of him before I put him into that elite status. But, you know, and then think about how the running game, the play action, you know, think about it. Velus Jones is big play, the 44-yard catch against the Bills came off of play action, right? Mm-hmm. And if you have, and I just don't think David Montgomery is that guy. So if you have a guy in the backfield like Jacobs or Barkley, the attention that they command from the defense will be far different than what Montgomery does, right? And so now you have a player who the defense needs to be focused on and worried about. And I think that opens up the passing game for some of these receivers that you hope, you know, end up playing better than they have over the past few years. The return of Darnell Mooney next year, and hopefully a Claypool is more acclimated to the Bears offense. I think if you have that running back who's also a good pass catcher, and then, okay, you do the work on the O-line with you know, maybe there's one more free agent signing on the offensive line and you draft a guy or two, and maybe Tevin Jenkins comes back healthy. All of a sudden now, I think you can turn this around rather quickly. I just think the value might be there at the running back spot more than any other when you look at what's available in free agency.
Right. I will say this, though. The counterpoint is valid of if you've got the number one rushing attack in the NFL right now with this group,
mm-hmm, and why where has it gotten you?
Yeah. So, like, you can't really go up in terms of a ranking in terms of where you stand within the league confines of running the football. But, I do think it would help. You brought up the play action there. It would help Justin Fields on some of those play action sets, and especially if your running back can contribute in the passing game, because David Montgomery, he's caught some touchdown passes this year, but I don't think people view him as this dual threat guy in terms of also being a great pass catcher. He's made some nice catches this year, but he's not going to be one of those guys I look at that can break away and really make a difference in the passing game.
He's serviceable as a pass catcher, right? And
you can find those guys.
Yeah, but he's probably going to want to get, you know, a bit of a raise being a free agent himself. Mm-hmm. And so I just don't think investing the money in David Montgomery. I'd much rather you pay up a little bit, and especially because you have the room. Again, it's all based on context, right? The Bears and where they're at with their cap space, you can pay a running back this offseason, significantly upgrade that spot on your roster, and still have plenty of room going forward, right? Like, And again, it's about who's available in the free agent market and where the value lies. And I also think you brought up the Bears being, you know, the leading rushing attack in the NFL. How have they gotten there, though? They've gotten there based on the strength of Justin Fields' legs, right? And I think we all agree that we're hoping this is the highest rushing total he ever has as a quarterback. Because,
or at least attempts.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Sure. If he can rip off 10 yards per carry on 110 rushes, then yes, he might best his current status. But that would be quite the achievement. Yes, you're right, though. Like, hopefully this is the most attempts he ever has. And so if that's the case, you can still go down in terms of your numbers as a rushing attack, but you need the passing numbers to go up in, you know, in conjunction, right? And I think that's where you need to have something working parallel offensively so that you can tap into more potential that Justin Fields has as a passer.
Right. And ultimately, you want to surround him more with the pieces in the passing game, which I don't know how much of a chance you're going to be able to do that this year when you look at the free agent class. But as I've kind of stated, like, I think just upgrading some of these spots to average will make a significant jump for this team across the board, whether it's the defensive line, whether it's the receiving core. I brought up DJ Chark's name a little bit earlier. He's a free agent this offseason.
Yes.
Is that a guy that, I mean, he's a hell of a lot better than Byron Pringle. He's a hell of a lot better than Equanimeous St. Brown. Like, that's a guy that you put with Justin Fields, and who knows, maybe Justin's able to unlock a little bit of something too and uplift the receivers around him, as we see great quarterbacks in this league do.
Yeah, Chark's solid. My only concern with him is that, is he very similar to Claypool and Mooney, right? He's not a true number one, so the only problem would be then, okay, well, if you're bringing him in, you know, it's a matter of improving the wide receiving core, but not necessarily the top end players. You noted to me, you brought this to my attention, Josh Jacobs was not happy with his team. The Raiders, of course, lost on Saturday night to the Steelers, the celebration of the Immaculate Reception game. But Josh Jacobs was having some success, but as to my what I was mentioning earlier, for whatever reason, Josh McDaniels got away from it. Here's Josh McDaniels upset on the sidelines.
How many times can you keep talking about sort of the same things and learning the same lessons?
Man, I'm tired of dealing with Like, every day I come here and bust my ass, I see the guys, you know, bust their ass, and, you know, and the result is not there. And, you know, for me, the last 4 years, the result hasn't been there. And quite frankly, I don't know what else to do. So, yeah, that's what it is.
That is not a happy man.
That is not a Las Vegas Raider next year.
I was going to say that sounds like a guy who very well could be. Now, the only problem is, I guess, you know, the Raiders can franchise him, right? And so that's but would you want to franchise a running back? I don't know.
Right. And remember, I don't know how, and you brought up how, like, we see the Raiders move away from Josh Jacobs over the course of games. I think the ultimate disrespect that they showed him this year was playing him in the Hall of Fame game.
Yes.
A game where you see third stringers at best out there, and you rolled out the guy who this year is the leading rusher in the NFL in that game. When I saw that, I said to myself, the Raiders have no respect for Josh Jacobs being out there.
So very interesting to see the NFL's leading rusher, where he will be playing football next season. Could it be with the Chicago Bears? All right, a local favorite, fan favorite, Jason Benetti, calls the White Sox games here in town. He will be doing a first this Sunday. We'll share with you what it is next here on ESPN 1000.